Okay.
Whenever I would meet people from any of those places that would speak about leaders or meeting world leaders, or when I would see Duke Ellington or Count Basie, I would think of the idea of royalty in a much more refreshing way of seeing that the true royalty, like Lord Buckley, is something that is not just passed along through marriage. It's not only something that you're born with, it's something that you acquire and earn by your conduct and your excellence of spirit and your humanity and your willingness to share what you have with others and the gift that you can bring to other people. That's a truly royal person, one who's generous and magnificent and enormous in spirit and achievement, which he was. And then finally, when our second child was going to be born, daughter was due in 1981, I got a letter from this wonderful woman who had sung Paulina Stark, which I gave you a copy of, who said, you know, since you already have a daughter named Alana, and you're starting all your children's names with A's and giving them all Hebrew names, said there's a wonderful song called Ein Adir, a Sephardic song. And since I know your father's side of your family is Sephardic, maybe this would inspire you to do something, either to give your child a name or sing them this song. And it was called Ein Adir. So I looked at that and I said, boy, that's beautiful. Well, at the same time, by an amazing coincidence, I was asked by Ken Rednowski to write a saxophone concerto. And I was trying to think of a good way of writing a saxophone concerto that could use the different materials that I've been interested in. And I thought about Lord Buckley always, about writing a piece, because I had written one in memory of Chano Pozo, the great conga player who was with Dizzy. And I had written other pieces, sometimes dedicated to people that were maybe not that well known, but were legendary and deserved more recognition, and also deserved my thanks as a musician and composer and person for what they contributed to our generation and to future generations. So I've been thinking about that, but when she sent me that, and I looked at that melody, I said, well, if it's a boy, I can call it Adir, and if it's a girl, I could call it Adira. And I looked at that melody and thought, well, since I already had an idea for a slow movement using jazz, and the first movement being kind of European with hints of jazz and everything written out, I could use Middle Eastern music, Nubian music in the last movement, was something I always wanted to do in some kind of a piece, and use this melody, and that gave me a construction for the whole piece. And then I started thinking about Lord Buckley, saying that would be a perfect way to show the different phases of Lord Buckley, the influence of the European royalty, the jazz and the blues, and then with the Nubian and Sephardic music, his, and a little bit of Shakespeare in the Park, his whole appreciation of that and his work and involvement in my life of knowing him without anybody ever having to know that, and still write a piece of music that would just use his name and not even mention all that. But that would give me a guideline in my own way to construct something. But in fact, this is the first time I've ever given explicit program notes, and the piece gets played by saxophonists now all over the world, so it's not dependent on this to have a long program notes to explain what the piece is about. But when that happened, I decided I'm going to call it Ode to Lord Buckley, and I called up the saxophonist and said, this is what I want to call the saxophone concerto. And he said, great. He said, Lord Buckley, he said, is that someone who's helped you out in the past? And I said, yes. And he said, well, has he been able to introduce you to people or help you to support yourself? I said, well, no. I said, he's not an English lord that's independently wealthy. I said, and I explained to him what he was. And Ken Radowski said, well, that sounds fascinating, because I'd like to know more about him. So I got him the Hipporama of the Cool book, and then I got him some Lord Buckley records and told him the whole story of what had happened the last night. And he said, well, that's really amazing. I'd like to know more about that. So I was furiously working on the piece, and my daughter was, well, I didn't know whether it was going to be a daughter or a son, was due to be born. So I thought, since Ina Deer was going to be in the piece, that would be dedicated to Ken and the and Bruce Hangen, the wonderful conductor of the Portland Symphony, now conducts the Omaha Symphony, one of our great American, young American conductors. And I'd be able to bring the new baby up to hear the piece. Maybe even hold it up at the reception. So everything was set. They were rehearsing the piece. It was really going well. The only problem was that our baby hadn't been born yet. And 12 hours before the piece was premiered, because they didn't know in the program whether to say that it was dedicated to the birth of a new child, Adira or Adira, because we didn't know whether it was going to be a boy or a girl. The baby was born, and I was going to try and take a taxi all the way from Portland, Maine, down to the hospital, because I was there for the birth of my other two children and had been there for some false alarms. But they told me that I'd never be able to get a cab or a bus or any plane or anything. It was at nighttime. So Adira was born, a beautiful little girl. And the next morning I went down and saw her. And that night they gave the premiere of the piece. And we gave out cigars to everybody and to the conductor. And it was one of the great experiences of my life to celebrate the birth of a beautiful child. And also to think about Lord Buckley and what a wonderful life he had. And we got about four or five standing ovation for the piece and four or five curtain calls, which is kind of unusual for a modern symphonic piece or concerto. And I just kept thinking, boy, I wish Lord Buckley were here or his family were here just to see that. And now saxophone players are playing it in the piano version. There's a symphonic band version and an orchestra version that is getting played really many different places around the world. The Louisville recording, I think, is probably going to be re-released on a CD so people can hear it, and also some other saxophonists are interested in recording it as well. And my hope is it will also take the name of Lord Buckley into new venues and make people begin to appreciate what a magnificent man he was and how much he did and inspired. And I always felt how lucky I was to have spent that last time with him. I always figured there must have been some reason for that, to be kind of put together with him just at that last day. And that's one reason why I never forgot him. So 1981, 21 years after he passed away, I was able to do that piece. And I've been in touch with Elizabeth and sent her the recording so she could hear the piece. And also gave copies to Dizzy and a lot of other people who loved Lord Buckley and still stay in touch with Elizabeth and everything. He was very much appreciated by so many people. And he's, I believe, probably one of the last people that has yet to be acknowledged as a tremendous force in that whole period of the 40s and 50s and influenced the 60s, 70s and everything else that's happened since then. Now there's been some acknowledgement of Charlie Parker and Monk with a great film, Straight No Chaser.
Kerouac with the real release of all that material.
Exactly, and Kerouac's now being acknowledged as a great writer that he was, which is all he ever really was concerned about, was having people appreciate what he was writing, as well as trying to be decent to all people that he knew. And Lenny Bruce with all his material coming out, and I think now it's Lord Buckley's turn, finally, to be acknowledged. And I guess at the time that all these people were there, it was just maybe too much of a good thing for the society to handle at that time. Yeah. And that's not unparalleled in history. Now I think as we're in the 90s, people can be discovered when they're 20, and that's fine too. But there, a lot of the people were like Charlie Parker and Dizzy and Kerouac were very, I mean, Jack had 11 books out before he really got acknowledged with On the Road. Or he got 11 books he'd written, they weren't out.
But a lot of them had been published already,
yeah,
too.
And my music's still getting out there. I'm 60 and I have over 100 pieces I've written and done a whole lot of stuff myself. And I'm just starting to really get my things recorded and re-released. There are a lot of people who stay with it and hang in there because of a certain era. No one expected it to be that easy. And I think one of the important things to have Lord Buckley's work out there is to show people, whether they're comedians, writers, authors, painters, plumbers, carpenters, whatever they're doing, that you can do great and be great as you can be, and you can have a wonderful life by virtue of the fact of what you've done and make a tremendous impact, even if it doesn't necessarily look that way.
Why do you think he's been neglected?
I think he was a pioneer. He was ahead of his time. He was much more than he was supposed to be. He was supposed to be a club date nightclub comic who was like this incredible genius.
Daddy, what time is it?
Okay. But I think now is Lord Buckley's time.
Us too.
And now, Mr. Okay, Adam, here we go, honey. I'll take you. He's got to go to his friend's house.
Okay.
Go swimming.
Let me just look over this quickly because I want to ask just a couple of other questions, if I may. You were a member of the Citizens Emergency Committee?
Yeah, Doc Humes asked me to join that afterwards, and I did. I went to one meeting. And to my horror, all the people at the meeting whom I read about in the Village Voice and other things who were politicians all stood up and started electing themselves to different offices. And I got the very strong feeling that most of the committee was kind of a foreshadow of a lot of other things I was involved with in the 60s. Really, very often, the benefit turned out to be for the benefit of people who were giving the benefit. Either, not necessarily financially, but in terms of their own agenda. I stayed with it because I thought it was important, and I was glad to see that they finally did win the case. But I felt that the way it was handled was a lot of the screaming and grandstanding wasn't really the way Lord Buckley would have handled it. Mm-hmm. He would have just gotten up and said something so straight and in a loving, humorous way that would have made everybody do the same thing and maybe even apologize to those people whose lives have been destroyed, mm-hmm. rather than making it confrontational.
Right. In terms of the Beat Generation, was Kerouac and Ginsberg and all those people into him, or were they sort of two different worlds?
Jack Kerouac was, of course. Alan, I don't think, was into at that particular time. He was a terrific reader and a wonderful person and a good friend and very supportive of younger people, but he never really had any particular interest in jazz, mm-hmm. or in that world. That was
a little bit though, because Hal was somewhat based on Lester Leaps in, I believe.
Well, no, he was influenced by Jack, who really was into jazz, mm-hmm. and could scat sing and play. And I knew Jack as a jazz musician. Alan never really had an interest in that, and never still doesn't. Mm-hmm. He was always more into rock and roll and whatever was current, which is understandable because he was surviving as a poet, or trying to survive as a poet.
Right.
So his interest in music, when he did his record, I helped him with that one recording that he made.
I was going to ask you about that, Jethro Road.
Yeah.
Dylan played on that too.
Yeah.
And Buckley had an influence on Dylan too. Were you aware of that?
I'm sure that he did.
Because Dylan used to do Black Cross,
yeah.
in his early shows. And there's even a Lord Buckley record on the cover of,
yeah.
Bringing It All Back Home in the back. But Dylan never, you ever talked to Dylan about Lord Buckley, the subject never came up?
Not that much, no, because he was more, Dylan mostly was interested in my relationship with Jack Kerouac. Mm-hmm. That was the only time, the rest of the time he would just talk about more abstract stuff.
Did you ever know any musicians who performed behind Buckley?
Oh, there's a whole bunch. I think almost everybody did at one time or another. And I don't want to misrepresent their names, but you could do the research.
Okay,
on that. They're literally hundreds.
Yeah, I have some, obviously, but some of them I've had contact.
And then there are ones who jammed with him, too. And like I did that night at George's, it wasn't part of his official band. But
right.
I'll never forget, there are literally hundreds, probably thousands, because wherever he was, he would invite the band to play with him. And he would have people come and sit in with him.
The memorial service at the Village Gate, did you go to that?
No, I don't know when. I'm not sure
that
when
happened.
That was
about 3 weeks after he died.
Yeah, I don't.
There was a memorial service there, and Diz and Ornette played together, which really blows my mind. The idea that, what kind of music did they make?
Yeah, I think I was working then because I would have been there otherwise.
Buckley's interest in, for editorial purpose, illicit substances. Any involvement that you saw or you witnessed at the time?
No, mostly he just had a few drinks. Mm-hmm. We were mostly drinking and eating up all the Bully or Duveries.
He'd mention anything about the Capone in Chicago days at all to you? Did he talk about that?
Oh, he used to talk about playing in the clubs. I mean, that was part of his routine too. And he had a lot of fans, of course, who were gangsters. Everybody did. I mean, when I played with Charlie Mingus at the Bohemia, some of the people that used to come down there, I don't think they were big figures, But the interesting thing was that the mob connected people always were the nicest to the musicians, the most respectful, and treated you very well as long as you didn't make any outrageous demands. But they were he had a lot of fans who were in that. Everybody did. I mean, at that time, that's who owned it.
Buckley had a church called Church. It was called Church of the Living Swing. Does it ring a bell?
Yeah, but that I don't think they.
That was an organized thing.
No, he didn't have any. That was like whatever, wherever he was.
Yeah, I hate it. Don't bang.
That's
that.
Wherever he was. The Church of the Living Swing was wherever he was.
It was a state of mind.
Yeah, that was a full time traveling church. He was the number one minister.
Buckley was really famous also for just pulling incredible scams on people.
Yeah.
Ripping them off, but then not really. Sometimes they minded, but a lot of times they didn't seem to mind just because he would borrow $1,000 from this person, he may come up with $500 from that person, and there's always some kind of BS thing going on. Were you the subject of anything like that ever?
No. All I just found was if he ever did that, he would give it all away to someone else.
That's the other thing they say is if you got $1,000 from one person, it would be redistributed.
Yeah, he was sort of like Robin Hood, but he would just do anything for anybody.
Okay, I think that's basically it. Ed Sullivan, he was involved a little bit with reading about it.
Well, I know he was supposed to go on the show.
He was on the show. He also toured with Ed Sullivan during World War II.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And there was the whole dance marathon era, too.
Yeah.
He never talked about any of those.
No.
See, some of these things happened so long ago.
Yeah.
The Capone bars, the dance marathons. We're talking 20s and 30s. And, we're all very familiar. We're more familiar with the stuff, say, from the mid-40s till his death.
Yeah.
But there's a whole period before that I would like to
get
a beat on. And I think it's quickly disappearing into the ozone of the past. Well, I think this might be an appropriate time to end, although I would love to hang out and talk for the next 3 hours and jam, but
yeah,
Mr. Adam has to be attentive.
I gotta go